the call letters enough. So it's no big deal if you repeat the call letters.
In good times.
Once or twice or 100 times. In fact, the more the better. Because, you know, sometimes people think they're listening to KSCO and they put down KGO because KGO gives their call letters 100 times more often than we do. And it's terrible that they should get credit for our good programming.
Truly.
I think one of the reasons that they're number one is because people get confused, and it's our fault because we don't give our own call letters enough.
Yeah.
Anyhow, so I guess we can start the show.
Cool.
Good morning. A brighter day is here. Good morning. May we bring you cheer.
We've got time, we've got tunes, we've got time, tunes, and temperature.
Get up and go, it's today, you know, on KSCO Radio.
Well, good morning, Monterey Bay, Silicon Valley, and everybody else listening to KSCO AM 1080 and KOMY AM 1340. It's Michael Z welcoming you to a two-hour program discussing the Middle East. We've done this a number of times before. If some people are getting tired of it, we're sorry. It's a very important issue that we're going to be covering. This is one of the few times that we can cover it in depth on your favorite radio station, so stay tuned.
Good morning. Now stay right here on KSCO Radio.
And let me introduce our panel members. Co-host Charlie Friedman, who will probably be taking over most of this program, is in the talk studio, as is Gil Stein. And a new person to our KSCO airwaves, Zoltan
Igaresi.
Oh, thank you. Thank you. I appreciate
it. I feel not like at all. Fool. Not at all. Enough.
And Zoltan, you are a self-employed inventor, and among other things, you've developed an anti-hijacking rat trap system.
That is correct.
Oh, good. Okay. So, but you have some, and we're serious, and this is going to be a serious radio program, obviously. Well, maybe it's not obvious at this point, but you have some very strong feelings as to what's going on in the world. Where were you born?
Yeah, I was born in Hungary.
Okay. And how many years ago was that, and how did you find your way to the United States?
Well, look, I was born in 1949, back in Hungary, in a communist system. And when I was 19, I decided, well, this communist system is a bunch of crap. That was like, current liberalism. So I decided to leave. So I left Hungary back in 1970 from Yugoslavia. Actually, I paddled a little kayak across the Adriatic Sea to Italy. So that became a...
Really?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it took like 4 hours. After, you know, long planning.
Would you say you were 19 years old?
That's correct, yeah.
Uh-huh.
Well, they made me serve the Hungarian army, so I was there for 4 months, and I had to fake that I was crippled, so they don't like crippled soldiers. So they said, well, we cannot really discharge you or court-martial you being crippled. So I decided, well, I'm going to be a mentally sick. So I decided, let's play that game. So I ended up in a mental hospital for 1 week till they find out, well, they probably had a little bit heavy metal damage to my brain. I said, oh, good, that sounds great. So I got a discharge. Then they said, okay, we're going to call you back to for service in the army after 1 year, see if you get more healthy. Of course, I was healthy 1 week after. Then I had to leave the country before the 1 year is really expired on me. So then I studied French. I became fluent in French in 4 months. So then at the same time, I had to practice endurance and kayak. And so I was kayaking for 3-4 days per week and studying French 6-10 hours a day till I became fluent. And then I ended up in Yugoslavia. And from Koper, right across Venice, I just paddled. And approximately 4.5 hours nonstop paddling from Yugoslavia to Italy. So And that's when I became free. So God bless, you know, this Italy. So then from then I, you know, lived in Italy for 6 months, then ended up in Canada, in Windsor, Ontario. I studied there, went to college there, went to computer technology school in Detroit, and I got transferred to the States, Raleigh, North Carolina, then Chicago, and so on. So I've been living in the States for, you know, 25 plus years.
My gosh, what about your family?
Well, my
did you,
father
did you leave your
was,
family behind in Hungary? Or?
That's correct, and you couldn't even speak anything about it for the reason if you were planning to leave the country illegally, that was punishable up to 6 months in jail back in those days, and also confiscation of any travel documents or passports. They never gave me a passport since
well,
I was...
Well, have you started your own family here? I mean, or do you maintain contact with any of your family or friends in Hungary? Can you?
Oh, yeah. Since then, I've been back to Hungary many times. I was also international service manager for a company in Scottsdale, you know, back in those days. So I used to go to Europe 4 or 5 times a year, and been to over 95 countries so far. So when I had a chance, I just flew back for a few, you know, few days visit. And my father was, you know, officially had to be a part of the communist system. And I was really a black sheep of the family since I defected, you know.
Oh, my. Well, welcome to KSCO, Mr. Black Sheep.
Yeah. Thank you. Love it.
Good to have you aboard here. Charlie and Gil, all kinds of changes going on by the second in the Middle East here. News that just came on at the top of the hour says that, you know, I guess we might be getting a little closer to a ceasefire here. I guess that's good news. Let's just launch into our discussion. Charlie, why don't you take it from here?
Okay, thank you very much, MZ. And what we're essentially going to try to do today, as you just mentioned, there have been a lot of developments since just a week ago when we talked about this. Many things have happened on both sides, and we're going to try to toss that around a little bit. And, of course, the function of our discussion here, just the three of us in the studio, is to stimulate some participation from those of you who are out in the audience. This is Talk Radio, KSCO, and you improve the program by your participation. Join
Don't
us.
Don't forget, we're on KOMY also. We're simulcasting these days.
Right. On this particular program,
yes.
Two broadcast signals, one on KOMY 1340, one on KSCO 1080. The telephone number to reach us here is 479-1080. And we also have a fax number if you want to send us something that that you think we need to know about. 475-2967 is the fax number here at the radio station. And again, the call-in number is 479-1080. Now, before the program began, Zoltan and Gil and I were outside in the anteroom talking about this, and each of us had some question that he wanted to raise in regards to this. I have a couple here that I think are interesting. Gil wanted to talk about the human toll and how it is being intentionally distorted, not only by Hezbollah and whose interest it is to do so, but how the conventional media are allowing themselves to simply serve as a mouthpiece for the figures and impressions given by Hezbollah. Am I misstating your case, Gil?
No, but I'd like to state it, if you don't mind.
I would like you to do that, please.
Yeah, I think that there's the problem that we have in this particular war, and it is a war. I don't think there's any question about it, is that there are people who are doing comparison body counts, and I don't think that that's appropriate. I don't want to minimize at all the suffering of the Lebanese people. I think that what's happened in the last several weeks has been a tragedy for a country that was just coming out of a disastrous period and was starting finally to basically resuscitate both with democracy. They had finally gotten rid of the Syrians and were about hopefully to build a new Lebanon, and that unfortunately there's been a real setback for them. But at the same time, over a third of Israel is now living essentially underground. One of the developments that happened so quickly is yesterday there was a rocket attack in Hadera, which is south of Haifa. It's not that far from Tel Aviv. It means that the Hezbollah rockets are now within range of probably 2 million Israelis. And Nasrallah, the head of Hezbollah, has threatened to bomb Tel Aviv, which would then put almost all of Israel under the gun. Just this morning, or at least this morning our time, another rocket killed three women, a mother and her two daughters. They are Bedouin Arabs living in northern Israel. They're the people. Many of the men in that village are members of the Israel Defense Forces. They are Israeli citizens, and yet they are the victims as well of these Katyusha rockets.
Gil, let me interrupt you for just one second. There's something that needs to be clearly stated here. There are civilian casualties on both sides. The difference is, the Israeli forces are not intentionally targeting civilians. Rather, instead, if there are civilian casualties, those are mistakes, tragedies to be commiserated about. On the Hezbollah side, civilians are intentionally targeted. That is exactly who they are trying to kill. Before the program, you handed me this little graphic. I'm going to try to describe this because, obviously, we're not on television. On one side, there's Hezbollah. On the other side, the Israelis. In each case, you have a soldier with a submachine gun and a baby carriage with a baby in it. On the Israeli side, the soldier is defending the baby carriage. He's in front of it, shooting at his enemy. On the Hezbollah side, the order is reversed. The Hezbollah terrorist soldier is behind the baby carriage, using it as a shield to protect him from the fire of his enemy, the Israeli soldier. Is that a fair representation of what we have here, Gil?
I think that's a fair representation, and I think that basically describes the situation. And that's why, you know, in the last day, in the last 24 hours, 175 more Katyusha rockets fell on northern Israel, about 100 within less than 2 hours. That is terrorism. That is what it is designed to do, is to kill civilians. There's absolutely no military value other than to scare the population and also to hurt the civilian workforce.
You know, one thing that I think we ought to get into here, I see a parallel right now between the way Israel is conducting this operation and the way the United States of America has conducted its operations in places like Iraq and Afghanistan. The basic strategy in Iraq, get rid of Saddam Hussein. In Lebanon, get rid of Hezbollah. The basic strategy is absolutely sound, as a matter of fact, necessary. But in each case, there have been errors in the execution of that strategy. There's a recent book out that details a number of steps the United States of America took or should have taken in Iraq in order to accomplish the goal of pacification of the country more effectively. In the case of Israel, there's a piece in the current Weekly Standard. It's labeled, "What We Have Here is a Failure of Intelligence." And I've seen other stories on this. Israel, I think, can be honestly criticized for having not understood exactly the nature of the foe they were facing in Lebanon and having been very slow to go in on the ground, which was essential. They hoped to do an air war type of thing. It wound up that was not possible. As a result, time has elapsed. Right now, MZ said, well, it looks as if we may have a ceasefire soon. He said, I guess that's good news. I personally don't think so. I don't want a ceasefire at this time. I don't want a ceasefire until Israel has succeeded in doing what it set out to do, clear Hezbollah up to the Litani River, I'm hoping. Well, what's your opinion on that, Gil?
Well, Charlie, I believe, and I'm not sure if there was a failure of intelligence or a failure of the political leadership to understand the intelligence.
Okay, that's another possibility, because the current leadership of Israel are civilians who've never been members of the armed forces, which has not always been the case.
Right, but I want to expand that a little bit, because I think there's been a failure of international leadership to understand the problem, because in 2004, the world was very strong in forcing Syria to end their occupation of Lebanon. And there was a UN resolution 1559, which basically was attempting to establish a buffer zone in southern Lebanon to move the Lebanese army into southern Lebanon to establish true Lebanese sovereignty and to disarm Hezbollah. That's about 2.5 years ago.
Right.
And the international community stood by while Iran and Syria armed Hezbollah. And so it's not just Israel that failed in that sense. It's the entire world that let this happen.
I agree completely with what you've just said. And also earlier there was a point about how the withdrawal of Syria from Lebanon constituted an opportunity. I would put forward the idea that there was no follow-through there on the part of either the Lebanese government or the world community. I think your criticism is quite well-founded. The point being that Resolution 1559, which you have alluded to, called for the Lebanese government to extend its sovereignty over the entire country, to disarm Hezbollah, to allow continue. If you want to be a relief organization, a political party, that's fine. But to continue to be an armed militia or to have the capability of being a terrorist organization with 12,000 Katyusha rockets sitting around was something that that resolution was intended to stop. And it never happened.
And that's why I agree with you regarding this ceasefire. A ceasefire for the sake of stopping hostilities temporarily is doomed to fail. A ceasefire with a comprehensive plan to move in international troops and to disarm Hezbollah and to move the Lebanese army down into the south, that makes sense. But you have to have the will to do it. And unless the other countries step up to the plate, it's not going to happen.
Gil, I'm going to ask Zoltan to comment on some of the things we've been throwing back and forth here, and I'm sure he also has some questions he'd like to raise for our consideration. Before I do that, I'll take a moment to remind all of our listeners that you're in tune with KSCO and KOMY, talk radio for the Monterey Bay, and our phone number here is 479-1080 if you'd like to be part of our discussion today. Zoltan, you've been listening to what Gil and I were talking about here, and I'd like your comments on that. And also, you mentioned you had something you'd like to bring forward. Please.
Yeah, the way I look at this Israeli and Lebanese conflict is actually it's a proxy war driven by Iran and Syria. If you look at the Hezbollah, it's a completely an illegal militia. They are not part of the Lebanese army. They do anything against the Geneva Conventions. When you see them parading on some of these clips, they have their own uniform, black uniform. They're jumping up and down the street with yellow flags. So they do have their own uniform. But again, when they're fighting against the Israelis, they're all fighting in civilian clothes. In other words, that's against the Geneva Convention. They're targeting civilians. That's against the Geneva Convention.
Even more specific on that, according to the Geneva Convention, if you are a combatant in civilian clothes, you are espionage.
That is correct.
And you are no longer afforded the protections of the Geneva Convention. You can be summarily shot.
That's exactly right. And that's exactly what the Israelis should do. Because it's hard to distinguish with them. Okay, here somebody shooting from a civilian house. So all of a sudden a civilian house, apartments or mosque or hospital becomes, legitimate target for attack by the Israelis. And it's unfortunate that some of these people, civilian people are killed. But again, okay, if a country needs to defend itself, they just have to do what has to be done. Okay? So if Israel has to flatten southern Lebanon, it's in my view, they can do so. And of course, probably not going to be a very popular in some of the liberal media. But again, it's Israel's rights to defend themselves from this kind of attack.
Looks like we've got a caller on the line here. We're going to go ahead and move to that. One thing I want to interject here, I particularly living in this neck of the woods, all I ever hear are criticisms of President George W. Bush, some of them reasoned, many of them incoherent. President Bush, in this particular instance, is, in my opinion, doing exactly the right thing, which, in this instance, is very little. You stand aside and don't monkey with the buzzsaw while it's busy cutting wood. Dave in Soledad, good morning and welcome to the program. Thank you for joining us.
Oh, good morning. It's my contention that the equation here is unsolvable simply because of the birth rate of the Arab and Palestinian people. I just like to ask you a question.
Dave, I hate to tell you this, but you're on a cell phone. It's breaking up badly.
Is this any better?
Yes, it is. Please continue.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Well, anyways, I just like to say that your guest spoke of military legality, and I just like to state, what is your guest's opinion of the Israeli government possessing atomic weaponry illegally?
Let's say, which one were you asking that of, Zoltan or Gil?
Well, I guess both of them
Okay, gentlemen, why don't you comment on that? It's an open secret that Israel possesses atomic weapons. It's also incontrovertibly true that they have never used them, and I don't know that they have ever threatened to use them.
It's illegal.
In what court of law?
In the court of law, that prevents anybody else from having them, like Iran and all these other guys.
Wait a minute. I'm not quite sure what you mean, but I mean, what makes something illegal?
Well, why do you say, why are people thinking that we have to present UN sanctions and go after countries like Iran and North Korea, but it's okay for Israel to do it?
Let me ask, I think Charlie brought it up very well. Iran has said that they want to wipe Israel off the map. Okay?
Well, so what?
So that means that they have said that if they have nuclear weapons, they will use them to wipe off Israel.
I want to say one thing. I don't care what anybody says. The fact is, if you listen to the testimony of the captain and crew of the USS Liberty and the 34 murdered Americans by the Israeli government, to convince me as an American taxpayer, why should I support this nation?
Okay, Israel made a mistake a long time ago and shot at a U.S. ship and killed a couple of people.
A couple of people, my 30, friend.
34 people. Now, how does that compare? How does that? Hold on a second, Dave. You spoke. Now let me speak. That's how it works on radio. How do you compare that to the bombing of the USS Cole, which damn near sank a destroyer and killed about 30 U.S. sailors, let alone the attack on the Khobar Towers, let alone 9/11, which killed 35 hundred innocent civilians. So I'm sorry, but your attempt to establish some kind of moral equivalency here falls very short.
Well, if you examine the physical evidence of the 9/11 attack, a 9-foot diameter hole in the Pentagon by a 757 is impossible. I mean, come on.
I beg your pardon. Are you claiming then that... hold on a second. Let me ask it. I'm asking you a question. Hush while I do it. Are you claiming then that there were no airplanes hijacked by al-Qaeda operatives that were then flown into the World Trade Center, Towers 1 and 2, and the Pentagon? Are you claiming that didn't happen?
I am claiming that the Arabs are the Lee Harvey Oswald scapegoat in this event, and the people pulling the strings are the CIA and the Israeli government.
Okay, you said it here, Dave. Thank you very much. You know, it's interesting. He said he was calling from Soledad. I believe he was actually calling from Oz.
I'm not sure where he was calling from. It's very interesting. This is a reaction of a number of people who point out one or two little things that may support it and ignore everything else. You didn't mention, Charlie, the 241 Marines that were killed by Hezbollah in Lebanon.
No, I didn't bring that up. If I'd listed everything, we'd still be sitting here.
But I think that is pertinent to this discussion. If we're talking about, you know, comparisons, that's, you know, Americans have suffered losses to Hezbollah directly. And as far as illegality of nuclear weapons, there is...
By that same argument, the Pakistanis and the Indians are both possessing nuclear weapons illegally.
Well, I'm not sure what means why, you know...
Well, his argument was that I guess he was depending on the non-proliferation treaty as being law, which of course it's not. It's an international treaty, but it's not law. But he's saying that anybody who is not granted the opportunity or the right to possess nuclear weapons by that treaty ipso facto possesses them, quote-unquote, illegally. I don't see that. I'm looking at the intention of a nation that possesses nuclear weapons. In the case of Pakistan and India, they're glaring at each other over their border. I don't believe there's any question that neither of those nations would ever even consider waving a nuclear weapon at any other country. Now, in the case of Israel, they have never waved a nuclear weapon at any country. It's an open secret they possess them, but I have never once heard anyone in the Israeli government say that under any circumstances they would be using nukes. The mere fact that they have them speaks for itself, and they don't threaten anyone with them.
Right, and that is certainly contrary to the public statements of the officials in Iran.
Exactly. We're going to have to break for a second. There's one other point I'd like to make here very quickly before we do so. The last caller came up with this, well, it's all a CIA thing, and, you know, 9/11, it didn't happen the way we heard it happen. I heard a statistic the other day to the effect that something like 30% of Americans have some investment in that foolishness. If you're one of those people, I ask you, please, come back in the saloon. you're placing yourself on the same level as people who claim that Neil Armstrong never walked on the moon, that it all happened in a soundstage in Hollywood somewhere. You're placing yourself on the same level as those who claim that Pearl Harbor was intentionally planned by President Roosevelt and that he stood aside and withheld all the intelligence available in order to allow 2,000 American soldiers and sailors to be killed by the Japanese naval air on that day. Perhaps there were communications that should have taken place, but my God, I mean, I'm no big fan of FDR. I'm a wild-eyed Republican, but to hang that around his neck is grossly unfair and abusive. To claim that 9/11 did not occur, to claim that Al-Qaeda agents did not hijack airplanes and fly them into the World Trade Center and into the Pentagon and into a field in western Pennsylvania. Lord knows where that one was supposed to go. To claim that this was somehow the work of the International Jewish Conspiracy and the CIA puts you in Never Never Land. Don't go there. That's where madness begins. This is KSCO, KOMY. I'm Charlie Friedman, back in a few moments with Zoltan and Gil, and you, if you're on the telephone, 479-1080 to join the program.
Calling all lawyers, KSCO will soon be adding a lawyer show to help people with their disputes. And we have a time slot available for a lawyer to become our KSCO lawyer on the air. There is probably no better way to build your legal practice than by becoming a celebrity in your field of expertise right here on everybody's favorite radio station, AM 1080 KSCO. The cost is surprisingly reasonable, and considering what lawyers make, heck, it's dirt cheap. Talk to an audience reaching over one-third of California and throughout the world via our live internet stream. For rates, times, and other info, call my voicemail at 429-2200. That's 429-2200. Or email me, mz@ksco.com. The number again is 429-2200. And don't forget, if you're an expert at something other than law and would like to host your own talk show, we can probably accommodate you. Call 429-2200 or email mz@ksco.com.
Tired of monkeying around with broken sprinkler heads and smelly lawn mowers? Weeds and dry patches make you scream. Growling over your decision to put a plant the size of an elephant in the space the size of an African hedgehog? Navigating your way through the maze of gardening and landscaping options and maintenance for your home or office really is enough to drive anybody wild.
Hi, I'm Randy Quilici, owner of Quilici Gardening and Landscaping. If anyone knows it's a jungle out there, it's us. We've been offering complete maintenance and landscape installation for residential and commercial properties since 1982. It's easy to let things get overgrown and out of hand and keep putting off adding that special water feature you've wanted for so long. Let us help by taming and shaping your landscape into something you'll be proud of. Call me at 425-5269 or visit us at QuiliciGardening.com.
Quilici Gardening and Landscaping, because without them, it really is a jungle out there.
Wow, I am so excited. This is Connie Reeder. I'm really excited about the phenomenal patented new weight loss product just launched by Youngevity. Slender FX is not a diet pill. This all-natural formulation is stimulant-free. It is a patented blend of plant material, fatty acids, and minerals scientifically designed to target fat loss in the midsection of the body. You can see why this is so exciting. Finally, a healthy way to lose weight, lose fat. Slender FX assists your body in burning fat, not lean muscle. People are even seeing results without drastically changing their eating habits. Slender FX supports healthful and safe fat loss for the long term, especially when combined with a balanced diet and committed exercise. Slender FX from Youngevity, a name synonymous with worldwide health, beauty, youthful energy, and now healthy weight loss. Get started on Slender FX now. Call 800-964-3064 and find out how. Again, 800-964-3064.
Hi, this is Bill Graff, KSCO's production director. Look, I could give you a lot of hoo-ha about how great our computer system is here. Bottom line is this. We have enough computers in this building that if our computers didn't work right, we'd be in a world of hurt. And our computers generally work pretty well. And when they don't, we can give a call to Dennis and the guys at Day and Night Computer, and they come over and fix them right away. We don't have to wait any time of the day or night. You know, that's nice for a business like ours that's so heavily dependent on computers and technology. Look, you can do whatever you want. My advice to you, though, is to call Dennis if you have a computer question or a computer problem, or if you just want him to build you a computer. And best of all, he'll save you time and money, and I suppose that's what it's really all about. The more money you save and the less downtime you have, the more profitable your company will be. If you don't have a company, hey, time is money at home, too. Remember that. Talk to Day and Night Computers. Call 465-7340. That's 465-7340. Do yourself a favor.
And we're back on the Saturday special on KSCO and KOMY. Charlie Friedman here with Zoltan Agresi and Gil Stein. And we're joined right now by Dave in Aptos. I'm going to get right back to the telephones. We have open lines at 479-1080 if you would like to be our next caller. Dave, good morning and thank you for calling.
All right. You're welcome. And I just wanted to mention something I'd read in an article recently about Iwo Jima. And some of the parallels that can be drawn with that battle.
Okay.
And the battle that is occurring now in southern Lebanon. And apparently the southern Hezbollah has been building these fortifications that create these kill zones for frontal assaults. And apparently had Israel done a Blitzkrieg-style armored assault, they may have been picked apart by these kill zones. And maybe it may be what you're seeing. Excuse me, I'm just not used to. It's kind of nervous.
You're doing very well. Just take a deep breath and tell us what you have to say.
It may be what you're seeing are probing assaults by the Israelis and piecemeal taking apart these fortifications.
So, correct me if I'm wrong, what you're saying is that what I described a few minutes ago as a faulty strategy may not actually have been a faulty strategy at all?
It may be something more imaginative than an all-out frontal assault, which would, of course, make them
more vulnerable to this sort of...
More vulnerable to being killed en masse if they're
to this sort of dug in and this kind of defense in from tunnels and caves, which we now know that Hezbollah has the countryside there riddled with these underground emplacements.
With plenty of anti-tank weaponry and everything else you would need to counter a heavy assault like that. So it's just something to think about when you see what's happening there.
I think Dave is absolutely right.
I
agree with him 100% on that. I'm not going to second guess the Israeli government and the military at this point. I don't think that's productive. I think that it's a very complicated situation, particularly because Hezbollah has not only these bunkers and, as Dave described them, kill zones, but they also have mobile launchers, and they move them from place to place, and some of them even are triggered by remote control, and almost all of them are in civilian areas, deliberately, of course. And so they've tried to soften it up from the air, and that causes civilian casualties, but it saves to some extent your own military. But eventually you have to go in, and that's what's happening right now. There was an attack by Israeli commandos from the coast just a few hours ago, and they went in and did that. Now, Israel suffered casualties. Fortunately, no soldiers were killed, but several were wounded. But that's what happens when you have the hand-to-hand combat. You do create a greater risk for your own troops. And that's something that is eventually going to happen. You can't do it strictly from the air. There's no question about that. But to go in with tanks and infantry in a frontal assault, like Dave described, would probably have been an absolute disaster.
Well, I'm very interested in hearing what both you and Dave have to say about this. The analysis that I was relying on was basically that of Charles Krauthammer. And I noticed, Gil, when you came in today, you actually had an editorial piece by him. Well, he's a commentator on television quite frequently, and he was the person that I've heard say a number of times, you know, there were miscalculations in terms of intelligence and like that. Now, from what I hear from you and from our caller, Dave, over there in Aptos, it's altogether possible that their intelligence was warning them that, look, if you go in on the ground to begin with, you're running into a meat grinder. Do it this way instead.
Exactly. And
right.
The commanders in Iwo Jima were roundly criticized for their unimaginative frontal assaults, which, even the Japanese commanders after the war had said, you know, had you attacked us on our flank or in the rear and divided your forces, the battle would have been done in days. And it's just something that, you know, people should think about when they see what's going on there.
And I think another thing that we can't leave out is the role of the, quote, international community and international media, that Israel has never had really free rein to do what they really need to do, that always they're looking over their shoulder to see that the UN might try to stop them or what the United States president would do, such as in 1967 when they forced Israel to stop.
Well, at that time, the president was Lyndon Johnson. Outside of the fact that they're both from Texas, there is no comparison.
No, I understand that.
But there's two presidents. This president is unquestionably has the most solidarity with Israel and understanding of the fact that Israel's cause and our cause are inextricably interlinked.
Right. I'm just saying that you can't. Israel does not have the green light as people might think they have, because they're constantly looking at what is going on in the rest of the world. And also, although some people may not want to believe it, Israel is trying to reduce and limit the civilian casualties. I mean, I don't know of any other army, really,
United States Army.
You know, that very few armies will alert the citizenry that there's going to be an attack in 3 or 4 hours, so you get out of town.
Right.
That's great, but it also warns your enemy that they're going to be under attack in 3 or 4 hours. Be prepared. If Israel wanted to inflict heavy civilian casualties, the toll would be probably 20 times as high as it is right now.
It would be ghastly. Dave, thank you very much for your call.
All right, you're welcome.
Appreciate you bringing that up. Zoltan,
there was something
you had to add, please.
Yeah, the expectation of the Israelis were really that they're going to clean out the Hezbollah within a few days or so. What they did in 1967, we have to remember that we were actually fighting, Israel was fighting against a uniformed army and air forces against Egypt, Jordan, Syria, and so on.
Right.
So we were, they were against uniformed, national armies. So those people, those armies were wiped out within days. And right now, Israel is fighting against people who are fighting an illegal war in civilian clothes. So they are dug into different tunnels, and this is a lot more difficult, fight for them to fight.
No question about that, and that's
and
why.
And also another thing, the Hezbollah, since it's receiving all the money practically as a proxy. Doing a proxy war for Iran is nothing more than a welfare state, because they are getting financed completely by Syria and Iran. So their survival really depends on just to survive.
Well, Zoltan, your description of this as a proxy war was exactly the cover story on the Weekly Standard a couple of weeks ago. I lent that copy to Gil. Go ahead and show it to Zoltan. He'll probably get a kick out of it.
Yeah,
Zoltan,
sorry, yeah.
We've got a caller on the line right now by the name of Joe in Salinas, and he wants to say something with you or ask you a question. Joe, please go ahead. Hello, Joe. Are you there? Joe in Salinas. No, doesn't appear that he's there. I hope that he calls back. We may have lost that phone call. That happens occasionally. So, Joe and Salinas, give it another try, and we'll put you up and give you an opportunity to raise whatever point it was you wanted. Are you there? Nope, doesn't look like it. Okay. Well, let me see here. You know, there's one other question that we haven't talked about here, and I keep hearing, this was something that we talked about some last week when we had Fred Hirsch here. There's all this, who started this? And on Fred was, the Israelis started it by overreacting to the kidnapping of Israeli soldiers. It seems to me that any objective analysis of the origin of this has to focus on the fact that Israel voluntarily withdrew from both South Lebanon back in, 2002, I believe?
2000.
And from the Gaza area in southern Israel. So in each case, you had the Israelis voluntarily relinquishing territory with no strings attached. And in each case, as soon as Hamas in Gaza and Hezbollah in South Lebanon were able to come into these areas, what did they do? Did they conduct themselves as social organizations or economic aid or education or something like that. No, rather instead, they secured rockets and began firing them. They began digging tunnels into Israel. Essentially, all they did was provoke and murder and kill. So who started it? I'll leave it to you to figure it out. I think we have our caller Joe back. Joe, is that you?
Can you hear me this time?
Yes, you bet I can. Now, you wanted to say something to Zoltan. Would you go ahead, please?
Yes.
Go ahead, Joe.
I think KSCO has another great ambassador on their lineup. I really enjoyed hearing Kay's commentary and your great letter to her.
Oh, good.
It said so many of the things that I would have liked to have said. And I really appreciated your comments about Michael Savage. And having someone like you appreciate him just goes to show that he's not a ranting, hate-filled man. If you read any of his books and if you listen to him, he really puts a lot of thought into his commentary, and I think it's based on realism rather than, just spewing out hate or something.
Well, you see, great minds think alike, you know?
I would hope that maybe they could have the entire program on at KSCO. I love to listen to it, just like I love to listen to Rush consistently.
You know, it's slightly off the subject, but I'm going to interrupt here for a moment to present an alternative viewpoint. Now, I'm a great fan of Mr. Limbaugh myself, and I listen to his program fairly regularly, and I don't level this criticism against him at all. But when I've listened to Michael Savage, even when he is expressing an idea that I might agree with, he sometimes does so in such intemperate terms that as a radio man, I find myself listening to this and thinking, you know, there are going to be some listeners who enjoy it, and obviously you are one, but there are going to be a lot of other listeners who are going to listen to this, and they're going to be repulsed by it. My idea on talk radio, I'm talking with you right now, Joe, because you're the caller, etc., but my real audience are hundreds, thousands of people out there who are listening to our conversation. And as I speak with you, I'm speaking to them. My idea is to try to present my ideas as clearly as I can, but also as attractively as I can, so that I can convince as many of those people as possible to come around to my way of thinking. I try to persuade. Michael Savage, it seems to me, does not go out of his way to persuade. Rather, he'd rather preach to the choir and in rather strong terms. And I'll say this. If I were a radical leftist, you know, Michael Moore, who's that guy with all the money who finances all the left-wing causes?
Soros.
George Soros.
Thank you very much. That's who I was thinking of. If I were Soros, I would find somebody like Michael Savage, or in the earlier days, Morton Downey Jr., and I would put that person on the air and point to them and say, you hear that? That's a conservative. And it would be kind of like, sometimes it almost seems to me like Air America must be financed by conservatives, because when you listen to the people on Air America, I mean, these people are crazy. You listen to the Al Frankens of the world, and you're wondering, what planet do you live on? I love people to listen to Air America, because every time they open their mouths, they condemn themselves. But I don't know. I would disagree with you, gentlemen. I don't think Michael Savage is an effective arguer for the causes that I support.
I was wondering what Zoltan might answer to your question.
Let's find out.
Well, okay, regarding Michael, okay, sometimes, you know, he gets your blood pressure up a little bit, but the way I look at Michael is number one, he's a good historian, and he looks at things, you know, in a perspective of history, and he also looks at, you know, what the nation needs first. We have to have borders and security, so he's 100% behind, you know, to secure our borders, secure our languages, so make sure English is our official language, so this way we would have one constant thing in this nation where everybody would speak English. When you look at something like a bilingual, first of all, you think it's the bilingual is bi means two. That means the second language would be Spanish. But then what about the Chinese? What about the Vietnamese? What about anybody else who just doesn't want to speak the other languages? You know, myself, I learned six languages. I used to give lectures on computer technology in these languages. You can learn the language, and especially when you come to this country like myself, you want to learn the language of the nation, so you want to advance yourself. And this is exactly what Michael Savage is really trying to advance. And sometimes he just stirs up some, you know, emotions.
Sultan, I would answer that by saying you brought out three basic points. Number one, the man emphasizes history. Number two, he's in favor of border security. And number three, he recognizes and promotes the value of the English language. I wholeheartedly endorse all three of those. In my opinion, lack of historical knowledge is one of the most egregious faults that I hear demonstrated by people all the time. But again, I would say it's not so much what he says, but the way he chooses to say it. Gil, you got your gesticulation there. Go ahead.
Yeah, I like to bring it back to topic.
Yeah, that's a good idea. I was going to say, Dave, or Joe, rather, thanks for calling and talking about that, but we do need to get back to our discussion on the Middle East today.
Thank you very much.
Call us again.
Yeah, and you brought up, who started this.
Yeah.
And some people may not be aware of exactly what happened. We can go back in history, for generations, but we can also go back to July 12th of this year.
Mm-hmm.
The historic dates we need to remember, 2000, Israel withdrew from Lebanon.
Right.
2004 is when Syria withdrew, and we had 1559 of the UN.
Mm-hmm.
Then on July 12th, this is what happened. I'm reading from an Israeli newspaper, and actually a very left-wing Israeli newspaper, Haaretz. 6:43 a.m., guerrillas from the militant Hezbollah organization kidnapped two Israeli Defense Force soldiers on the Israel-Lebanon border Wednesday morning in the midst of massive shelling attacks on Israel's north. The soldiers were snatched when guerrillas attacked two IDF armored Hummer jeeps patrolling along the border with gunfire and explosives, et cetera, et cetera. And then it says, the IDF on Wednesday afternoon sent troops across the border to search for the missing soldiers, marking the first incursion into Lebanon since the withdrawal in May 2000. Those people who are criticizing Israel for overreacting, saying that, they're only doing it because of, going after two soldiers, and yet they're killing hundreds of people in Lebanon. If it was only the two soldiers, it would be bad enough. But this was... the kidnapping of the soldiers was across an internationally recognized border, and that was done under the cover of the rocket attacks on northern Israel, which have continued today. Probably close to 3,000 rockets have fallen already, causing significant civilian casualties.
All of them targeted upon civilians.
If they're even targeted. I mean, that's the whole point, is they're so random.
Well, what they're doing is these rockets are very inaccurate. We both know that. But the Hezbollah are firing them in the appropriate direction and praying to Allah that they kill as many Israeli civilians as possible.
And if you see the damage on television, if you see the pictures, and I don't know really what's, the American media is showing that much, but what I see, particularly on Israeli television, is the damage that comes from the shrapnel. And there's... generally speaking, if it lands on a building or whatever, it's going to do damage only to that building. But if it falls in an open field or an open area, it's going to spread the damage out for many meters because of the shrapnel.
Ball bearings
ball bearings. It is designed specifically to inflict casualties.
By its very nature, it is an anti-personnel weapon. Want to emphasize right now, we've got enough time before the top of the hour to take a call. Why don't you make it your call? I've got open lines right now at 479-1080. Dial a phone and put in your 2 cents worth here. Zoltan, you had some observations to make on what Gil was just saying. Why don't you go ahead, please?
Yeah, one of the, I think when we go back to this problem was Muslims, Islam, and Christianity, and so on. If you look at the Quran itself, it goes back to 12th century, whatever. So it never really been upgraded. Reprimand. What do you call it? What's the word for that? To come up. What's the terminology for revising the Quran?
A reformation.
A reformation. That's the word I was looking for. Sorry. Okay. So if you look at the Muslim culture, they have to go and pray five times a day.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, my question is that really now, if you go and work, five times a day, when you can actually, come up with some kind of work? What can you produce? You work in a factory. How can you take so much time off and be productive? member of this international community, because you have to be also competitive with different countries like China,
perhaps
Japan, USA, and so on.
Zoltan, perhaps this is one of the reasons why the economies of these Muslim countries remain basket cases.
That's the reason, because in my view is that the problem is going back to economy, because the average people in the back in Iran or Iraq, they sustain on practically on $2-3 per day minimum welfare donations. That's during Saddam, and even currently they do get more money, but again it's still, they just don't have a middle class system which was developed which actually came up in Europe or in United States and anywhere else. So the problem really goes back to increased population growth and lack of economy which can really support their people.
Looks like we've got a phone call here from Scott in Boulder Creek. Let's go ahead and put him on the air and see what he has to contribute. Good morning, Scott. Thanks for calling.
Thank you. Good morning, gentlemen. I can see the difference between conservatives and liberals is very much like that cartoon that you described the difference between the Israelis and the Hezbollah with the baby, whereas the liberals put logic after emotion, and with conservatives put emotion after the logic. I think that most, even liberals, agree that Israel has a right to exist. As to the method, as to I believe as Israel believes that it has to destroy this enemy that's outside of its gates in order to protect itself. What I see is that those who agree with, Hezbollah invertibly or directly fall into three categories. The ignorant, who won't be listening to this show or watching anything beyond network news, anything contrary to their beloved party, the party. They want to be in with their friends. They can even give up God, as Ann Coulter said, and because they have their friends. And the second category are the communists and the people who really hate America and want it destroyed by any means. And the third are the confused, like the first caller. They know something about Rockefeller et al. As Illuminati, but they leave God out of the global political equation and falsely believe somehow that Jews are behind the occultic secret societies hidden within respectable organizations such as the Masons and such.
I've been listening to mythology like that for years, Scott, and I thank you for calling and talking about that. One thing I'd like to mention here, years ago the left was very supportive of international Jewry. And, of course, today the left is very much opposed to Israel and stands against it. It's my idea that the reason the left is no longer supportive of the Jews is because the Jews have stopped being victims. After the Holocaust, Jews everywhere took a collective decision, never again. And by that, I see them saying, never again will we as a people depend on the... When somebody says, we're going to exterminate you, we're going to drive you into the sea, we're going to annihilate you, which is exactly what Hezbollah and Hamas are saying today. Never again will we depend upon the good offices of the civilized world to protect us. Rather, instead, thank you very much, we will protect ourselves.
Amen. Gil, hang
on a second. Gil's got something to add, and make it quick, because we got about 40 seconds to the break.
Okay, where I disagree with Scott is, at least in this country, there is basically no difference between the two major political parties. On this issue, both the Democratic Party and the Republican Party stand extremely strong and united in defense of Israel. And you can look at every vote that's come down probably for the last 25 years, and whether that's part of the international Jewish conspiracy that some people want to talk about or not, I think it's a fact.
That comes as wonderful news. I'm too used to living around Santa Cruz, I guess.
Scott, we got to take a break right now. Thanks for calling.
Thank you.
Ladies and gentlemen, this is KSCO Santa Cruz, KOMY Watsonville. You're listening to the Saturday Special. Charlie Friedman along with Gil and Zoltan back here in a few moments. And Kay's commentary is coming up. Let's take a listen to what she has to say. She tells me it's germane.
Your source for news, sports, traffic, and weather. AM 1080, KSCO, Santa Cruz, San Jose, Salinas, and Monterey.
local news, and the best in talk radio. AM 1080, KSCO Santa Cruz, AM 1340, KOMY Watsonville.
Radio, I'm Karen Stewart. The UN Security Council is meeting this afternoon. They're going to discuss a call to end the fighting between Israel and Hezbollah. We're going to get an update on that now from Fox News Radio's Mike Makowitz. He's live in Jerusalem with this report.
Karen, this draft UN resolution gives Israel much of what it wanted. For instance, while it calls on Hezbollah to immediately stop attacks, it only calls on Israel to immediately halt offensive operations, apparently giving Israel the right to strike back if attacked. It also calls for Hezbollah to disarm an arms embargo for any Lebanese group outside of its military and the unconditional release of the abducted Israeli soldiers. Now, while the details are being worked out in New York, the fighting here continues full force. More than 170 rockets rained down on northern Israel, killing at least 3 civilians. Israeli commandos hit an apartment building entire overnight, suspected of firing rockets, engaging Hezbollah in a fierce fight. And there's more to come. Israel warning residents of the Lebanese port city Sidon that air attacks are planned there.
Mike Makowitz reporting live from Jerusalem. Thanks, Mike. Hezbollah continues to send those rockets down into the northern Israeli area with rockets yesterday striking deep into a town 50 miles south of the border at Lebanon. The UN resolution, it has wrinkles that still need to be ironed out.
Only a couple of sticking points remain, most notably the role of Israel's military between a ceasefire being signed and the arrival of a multinational force. Israel wants to stay and hold Hezbollah back. France, which will most likely lead that international force, wants Israel gone and the fighting to end.
Fox's Dan Springer, and he's a two-time loser now, fired from his team. He may lose his title. Tour de France winner Floyd Landis has come up positive again for elevated testosterone in his urine, and the French lab that ran the test says no chance of error. You're listening to Fox News Radio, fair and balanced.
It attacks the brain, and you might not know what hit you.
It's a stroke, and it can cripple or kill you.
If suddenly you're numb or weak on one side, limb, or face,
it could be a stroke. Get help. There's no time to waste.
It could even be a sudden, severe headache without cause.
If you wait to get help, time lost is brain lost.
Maybe it's a loved one slurring their speech or dizzy.
Call 911 and get medical help quickly.
There are even more symptoms that I did not mention.
So call or hit the web for information and prevention.
Blacks have a higher occurrence. Do you want to know more?
Call 1-888-4-STROKE or visit www.strokeassociation.org.
High blood pressure, diabetes, and obesity
all make the risk of a stroke more likely.
But remember, if it happens, do not delay.
Or disability might be the price you pay.
A public service message brought to you by the American Stroke Association and the Ad Council.
In his weekly radio address, President Bush asked Congress to give him legislation to allow more foreigners into the United States. In the Democrats' response, Colorado Senator Ken Salazar blasted a failed Republican attempt to tie an estate tax cut to a minimum wage increase. With Raul Castro taking the helm of the communist regime in Cuba, Secretary of State Rice has broadcast a message to their people.
We will stand with you to secure your rights, to speak as you choose, to think as you please, to worship as you wish, and to choose your leaders freely and fairly in democratic elections. All Cubans who desire peaceful democratic change can count on the support of the United States. We encourage the Cuban people to work at home for positive change, and we stand ready to provide you with humanitarian assistance as you begin to chart a new course for your country.
Castro fell ill last week. It's the last thing they needed in El Paso. More rain on tap for today following 6 days of downpours that have weakened a dam across the border in Mexico. There's renewed evacuations as officials monitoring the dam say it doesn't look good.
Part of the structure with the Army Corps of Engineers, and they're trying to determine whether it's going to hold or not. But I've already gotten information that they're afraid it is going to breach.
A break in the dam could drown downtown El Paso in water the equivalent to that of a tidal wave. And an online auction of what was billed as Leo McCarey's Best Director Oscar for 1944's Going My Way was canceled on Friday. That after officials from the Academy of Motion Picture Arts and Sciences deemed the trophy a fake. Opening bids began at $25,000. And a night of highs and lows for Barry Bonds, the San Francisco Giants slugger, slammed his 723rd career home run last night. Then he was ejected in the ninth inning after arguing with an umpire, and he lost the game. I'm Karen Stewart, Fox News Radio.
Good morning, everyone. Good morning, everyone, and thank you for joining us here at AM 1080 KSCO Santa Cruz and AM 1340, that is, KOMY Watsonville. I'm Dave Michaels with your weather report for today, Saturday, August 6th. 2006. Today will be mostly cloudy with northeast winds up to 5 miles an hour, highs around 64 degrees. Tonight will be mostly cloudy with some fog, west winds around 9 miles an hour, and lows around 56 degrees. Tomorrow will be mostly cloudy with patches of fog in the morning, southwest winds around 6 miles an hour, and highs around 63 degrees. Tomorrow night will be mostly cloudy with west winds around 9 miles an hour and lows around 55 degrees. Your Monterey Bay boaters forecast for today, you can expect southwest winds 5 to 10 knots with wind waves 2 feet or less and a mixed swell along with the northwest swell 3 to 5 feet at 9 seconds and a south swell at 2 to 4 feet at 16 seconds along with patchy fog and drizzle. It's time to take you back to the Saturday special with your guest host, Charlie Freeman, right here on AM 1080 KSCO, AM 1340 KOMY Watsonville.
Is a KSCO commentary. Here is Kay Zwirling.
As residents of Santa Cruz for six decades, our family remembers it as a bit of paradise when people respected and were kind to each other. It was a sad day many years ago when the so-called Resource Center for Nonviolence came and stayed. Led by its leader, Scott Kennedy, the Resource Center set out to introduce at every opportunity unadulterated hate for the State of Israel. In truth, the organization should be called instead the Resource Center for Hate and Violence, because sooner or later, hate begets violence. Its modus operandi has always been to invite speakers who bemoan the Arab issue and always blame Israel. You should know that the name Palestinian is newly adopted. It's a made-up word. Israel was called Palestine for 2,000 years. Palestinians sounds ancient, but it's really a modern invention. Before the Israelis won the land in the 1967 war, Gaza was owned by Egypt, the West Bank was owned by Jordan, and there were no Palestinians. I borrowed the last paragraph from Dennis Miller, comedian turned researcher, and also the next two paragraphs, which are awesome and priceless. Dennis is not Jewish. Quote, as soon as the Jews took over in 1948 and started growing oranges as big as basketballs, what do you know? say hello to the Palestinians, weeping for their deep bond with their lost land and nation. So, for the sake of honesty, let us not use the word Palestinian anymore to describe these delightful folks who dance for joy at our deaths until someone points out that they are being taped. Unquote. Well said, Dennis. To continue, under Arab leader Arafat, whose ring Scott Kennedy bragged that he kissed on his various visits to Israel, an Arab country of their own, when offered, was refused many times. The Arab agenda was and still remains the total annihilation of the State of Israel and all their Arab brethren from Saudi Arabia, Iran, Syria, etc., love using these displaced Arabs as political pawns. So, the other night, during another Resource Center-sponsored talk by the Arab ambassador to the U.S., Ambassador What's-His-Name, once again lamented the condition of his stateless people. Give me a break. At that meeting, our mayor gave the Arab ambassador the keys to our city, and by so doing, joined the army of hate and bigotry, adding more shame to our city, and surely not speaking for many of us. All this from our proud, hate-free zone city. Also, the Sentinel gave that recent get-together a big front-page spread. Why does it keep haunting me that our veterans parade, and not this time vets, never even got one word mentioned on the Sentinel front page? Wasn't it worthy enough? For KSCO and KOMY, this is Kay Swirling.
Well, Kay told me that her commentary today was going to be on target or on the subject, and it's very interesting because what she was discussing, that absolutely shameful gathering in Santa Cruz, was something that the three of us were discussing out in the office before the program began. You recall all that. I tell you what, we're going to digress for a moment from that. We have a caller on the line who's been waiting for quite some time to get on the air, and I want to take his call right now. Mark in Fremont, good morning, and thank you, sir, for your patience. Hello, Mark. Hello, Mark. Nope. Okay. Well, I guess he did drop. We didn't know that. Okay. Let's talk a little bit about the point Kay raised. The idea of kissing Arafat's ring or even touching any part of him causes my flesh to crawl. And I'd like to hear you gentlemen's Zoltan, Gil, which one of you would like to start?
Yeah, if I may, I start. No. If you go back to Arafat, okay, now he's the actual inventor of the hijacking.
That's right. I'd forgotten that.
Okay, you know, he and his team in Hamas has hijacked the several planes, and they hijacked boats and so on. And still bothers my mind here that how come Arafat, was the inventor of the hijacking system, it got a Nobel Peace Prize. And on top of that, Arafat has received through the UN and from the United States and from the EU countries, billions of dollars to support the Palestinians. So let's question, what did he do with all this money? A few years ago, it came out just after Arafat died that he actually stashed away over $1 billion into a Swiss bank account, and his wife is living in luxury in Paris.
I guess the major difference between somebody like Arafat and Ferdinand Marcos is that Marcos at least didn't try to terrorize anybody except the Filipinos, whereas Arafat does his best to export his terror.
That's correct. So all these,
they're both a couple of mega thieves.
That is correct. So this massive corruption what is existing in the Palestinian right now is really preventing the people of the Palestinians to come up with some kind of a decent lifestyle. So they could have invested this money into infrastructure, buildings, factories, training their people to come up with an economy which could sustain themselves and make themselves Israelis have a proper life. The only industry which was, you know, booming in Palestine is actually was the suicide bomber. Okay, so thanks to Saddam, so he was giving $25,000 for every family who blew their kitty up. You know.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and then I hear people claim, well, there was no connection between Saddam Hussein and international terror. Talk about ludicrous. Going to interrupt for a second. Mark in Fremont is on the line again. And are you there this time, sir? Mark in Fremont. Hello. Okay, well, that's two strikes and you're out. I'm sorry, Zoltan. Did you make your point there? You want Gilda?
This is what I really question that I know. The news media, they don't really question at all. Okay, what happened to with this $1 billion? Okay, and because they could just go to the Swiss banks and have this money returned to Palestinians and actually, you know, give them a better chance of, you know, rebuilding their economy and actually create something what they can depend on it. You know, instead of just being fed with hate, and the only future they would have is if you go and actually wipe Israel off. So this is just sick brainwashing.
Yeah, I want to comment on Kay's piece. First of all, I think there was a slight mistake she made there. She referred to this as the Arab ambassador. He's what's called as the Palestinian ambassador. I don't think there really is such a thing as an Arab ambassador. But I want to point out something that most people don't know, and that is that for the sake of argument, we'll call them Palestinians, although I understand where Kay is coming from, but it's just easier to call them Palestinians right now. They have been oppressed and abused by their own brethren, in a sense. I don't know how many people know that in Egypt there are 70,000 Palestinian refugees who are not allowed to own any property, not allowed to have bank accounts and get loans. In Lebanon, there are almost 400,000 Palestinians, about 10% of the population, and they have no right to become citizens or have legal status. In Syria, there are over 400,000 Palestinian refugees who cannot become citizens. In Kuwait, there are close to 500,000 Palestinian refugees, at least until 1991, when they kicked about half of them out because they supported Saddam Hussein against Kuwait. So Palestinians are victims to some extent, but they're not necessarily the victims of Israel. At some point, this group of people have to take control and responsibility for their own actions or inactions and quit blaming Israel and everybody else for their problems. They've elected a corrupt leadership.
Gil, you've just made an excellent point, and this is something that I think a lot of people lose sight of. The history, and, you know, edit me on this because I know very well that you're extremely well informed. Back in 1948, when the United Nations first created Israel, there was a partition, and Israel was granted so much land, and Palestine was granted so much land. The Palestinians, in alliance with the Egyptians, the Jordanians, promptly went to war in an attempt to exterminate Israel, to simply wipe it off the map. Well, the Israelis fought back and were victorious, and in so doing, they absorbed much of what had been set aside as Arab lands. The Arab inhabitants, Palestinians, if you will, many of them then decided, well, we're going to leave. It wasn't that Israel expelled them. That never happened. What happened was these people were not going to live under Israeli rule, so they picked up and moved into Jordan or into Egypt or into Syria. Most of them went into the West Bank and into Jordan. What happened then? Well, as we all know, Israel is a tiny piece of land. The rest of the surrounding territory, thousands of square miles, is Muslim land. It would have been a simple matter to resettle these refugees, plenty of land to do it on, but rather, instead, a decision was taken that they would be more valuable as political pawns. And as a result, these refugee camps were established. We still hear about these refugee camps because 50 years later, they are still there. The Muslims, the Arabs, have absolutely refused to resettle the Palestinians. Instead, they feel it is in their interest to have this constantly aggrieved group of people that they can point to and say, oh, poor them. Whereas the number of Muslims who actually stayed behind in Israel, who said, we're not going to flee, have far better lives than Muslims in any part of the Middle East, because they have full citizenship in Israel. Unlike the Muslim world, Israel allows people to have full citizenship to participate in elections. The Israeli Knesset has 120 members, and I cannot remember how many of those members are Arab, but I believe it's something like 15 or 20.
No, it's actually less, but
The point being, there are Arabs in the Knesset.
There are Arabs in the Knesset, and the fact that they have their own political parties, and they also in the past in many elections, Arabs have run as members of the list of the Labour Party or even the Likud Party. What Kay was talking about is, it's so well said. It's a problem. I think this idea of victimhood is... this ambassador was quoted as saying, "We are the victims of the victims of the Holocaust." Well, no, you're the victims of your own doing, I think, in for the most part. There were many opportunities. Abba Ibn, the former foreign minister of Israel and ambassador to the UN, made the comment that the Palestinians never miss an opportunity to miss an opportunity.
I've heard that one a number of times, and by golly, that rings true.
And if you look at what happened just about 1 year ago in Gaza, I think that's another example of where they were given the opportunity to be completely free of Israel, completely free of Jews, ethnic cleansing at its finest. Not a single Jewish person in that entire area of about 120 square miles.
And Israel paid a price for evacuating those settlers.
Since that time, approximately 1,000 rockets have been fired from Gaza into Israel across the international border, not to mention this latest kidnapping of the soldiers across that line. So instead of taking that opportunity to build a state, to show, hey, we can do it, We can build infrastructure. We can invite foreign investment. Instead, they turn it into
opportunity for more terrorism.
Exactly.
We got Mark back on the phone. According to this, it was our engineer in the control room who didn't cell level correctly or something on that order. So let's see if we can get him on the air this time. Mark, are you joining us today?
Yeah, I'm
excellent.
Here.
Thank you for your patience. Please make your point.
I just want to say that this hiding behind Hezbollah, I see that yellow flag. To me, that's Lebanon. So if Lebanon can't get their act together, that's not my problem. But I see this Hezbollah attack as Lebanon. The Lebanese have to come together and straighten that mess out up there. I know they had a bloody civil war, but that's not my problem. All these tribes up there have to get together. Because I see it as Lebanese. They might as well carry the Lebanese flag the next time they attack Israel, because they're getting it anyway. So go under the flag.
That's interesting. Zoltan, what would your reaction to that be?
Well, as a matter of fact, I think I should agree with that, because Lebanon is really complicit in this this attack against Israel. Because they knew that we had the UN... a resolution that the Hezbollahs need to be disarmed, and they did nothing against it, so they're really complicit, and Lebanon as a country itself is actually responsible for attack against Israel.
Yeah, I agree with the most part. I think the one of the problems, though, is we have to recognize that Lebanon as a country is so ununified with the various religious factions there, that it's very difficult. It's been very weak for almost its inception. And
you've got the Maronite Christians, you've got the Druze, and you also have Sunni Arabs.
Right, and the biggest problem, as I see it now, is that balance that had been there between, say, the Christians and the Muslims, along with the Druze, has been changed, because now a majority of the people are Shiite Muslims, and that has changed the equation, and that may explain to some extent why we have this complicity of the Lebanese government. In other words, even the Christian president and the Sunni leadership are concerned, because they are vastly outnumbered at this point by the Shiites.
Mark, thanks very much for making your point. Did you have any other observations?
Well, no, I understand that situation, but I think, being as though the French created Lebanon and, to protect the Christian community, I think they should take a big part in making sure that it survives.
Thanks for the call.
Thanks.
Have a great day. You know, one of the things he just said, that the French created Lebanon. Actually, Lebanon and what is now Israel and what is now Jordan and Syria and all of that, prior to World War I, was all part of the Ottoman Turkish Empire. And in the aftermath, of World War I, two great empires broke up. One was the Habsburg Empire of Austria-Hungary, and the other was the Ottoman Empire. Now, the League of Nations undertook to create the nation of Turkey, which exists today, and to award League of Nations mandates over various parts of what is now the Middle East. You had what is now Syria and Lebanon were under French mandate. What is now Israel and was Palestine at that time, and what is now Iraq were under British mandates. So you had these various European administrations going on there, and it was during this period that you had the stage set for what we have today. The British in particular put the Grand Mufti of Jerusalem in charge of things. And if you think Yasser Arafat was a sweetheart, check out the Grand Mufti sometime. We're going to get back to the conversation in one split second. I need to give the telephone numbers, and we need to take our break. It's 11:25 right now, and after the break, we'll be going all the way to the top of the hour. I have open lines right now, so I want you to call and join us. 479-1080 is the telephone number. If you need to fax something, 475-2967. I'm Charlie Friedman. Zoltan Egeresi and Gil Stein will be with me when we get back with you on the Saturday special on KSCO and KOMY.
J.C. Heating and Air Conditioning was started in 1975 by John and Carol Hadley. I'm Chris, and when you call J.C. Heating, I'm the guy who's going to come over to your home and explain your new heating system, air conditioning, and indoor air quality appliances. The secret to J.C. Heating's success in the Monterey Bay Area for 30 years? We offer safety, comfort, and value. Pretty basic. If you're building or remodeling, or just want to get rid of your old inefficient furnace, call us at 831-475-6538. Want to know the latest in high efficiency heating and cooling? Call me. Trouble with your ducting? Those critters will get in if you don't watch out. Call JC Heating. We want to hear from you. And for those of you who suffer from asthma or allergies, ask about our perfect air purifier. JC Heating and Air Conditioning. Regular people. I'm Chris, a regular guy who wants to get in your house and fix it. Call us at 831-475-6538. JC Heating, 475-6538.
This house ain't grand, but for sure it's mine. It's a beautiful driveway for which I pine. I want a thrill when I park my ride. Give me a driveway that's smooth and wide. My neighbors are jealous, I'm happy to say. Granite Construction made my day.
Our little vineyard is a ton of fun. Seems there's always a job to be done. Now it's time to build that retaining wall and a whole lot of earth to haul. Granite Construction is our go-to crew. Granite Construction, thank you.
My corporate project has got me in a sweat. If I really make it happen, that raise I'll get. It's big and complex, but I can't get uptight. Just got to be sure it's on time and done right. So I went and got the best I could find. Granite Construction, that's project peace of mind.
When you need to find the poetry in a job well done, call 1-800-GRANITE. For construction materials and private and custom jobs of any type, Granite Construction, what can we build for you?
For grocery shopping the way it used to be and the way it should be, shop family-owned and operated Shopper's Corner at Brant's of 40 in Soquel in Santa Cruz. Why? Give a listen.
I shop at Shoppers because I love the butchers. They tell me how much meat to buy and how to cook it, and whenever they tell me, it comes out fabulous.
I love Shoppers because it's got fresh things and a tremendous variety of everything, and don't forget those wines.
Well, you know, I really like the produce department. They really have fresh things and good prices, and onions, 29 cents a pound, you can't beat it, so that's why I shop here.
I've been shopping here for almost 50 years. And they have the best produce in town. The people are nice. Do you know Gloria and Dorothy, the two of the checkers? I've known them for many years. It's just a fun place to shop. It's kind of hometown.
For meat, cheese, bread, produce, and the best selection of wine anywhere, shop Santa Cruz's oldest and friendliest family-run market, Shopper's Corner. It's the store with a wooden floor.
Rocky here from Taylor Vision Satellite. If you're considering a satellite dish due to the high cost of cable and poor service and thinking of calling the 800 numbers direct, think again. Answer my phones for one day talking to people that have, and you'll understand why it's best to call Taylor Vision. I get you into the right equipment and programming the first time. With 25 years of experience, I can help. Call 476-1636 or 252-0441.
Dave Allen, A Blast to the Past, Sunday afternoons at 5 p.m.
We're going to rock around the clock tonight. Put your glad rags on. Join me, hon.
It was a night. Ooh, what a night it was. It really was.
Such a night. 34 wagon and we call it a Woody.
He's so fine. Our day will come.
Cause it's witchcraft.
Get my drift? Sunday afternoons, 5 p.m. here on AM 1080 KSEO. Get with the program.
Hi, I'm Adolfo Garcia, owner of Community Tree Service. We offer dumpster rentals, tree work, demolition, and free estimates. For any of these services, please go ahead and call my office and either talk to Regina or Naomi at 763-2391. Thank you.
Are trees around your house looking strange, leaning in the wrong direction, blocking your sunlight, in danger of falling? Take care of this and call us, the professionals, Community Tree Service. We're licensed, insured, and bonded. We offer free estimates and are ever ready in emergency situations. We take pride in being reliable and will accommodate your needs with safe professional service and advice. Call our office today at 763-2391 or from Santa Cruz, 426-6340.
Hi, I'm Adolfo Garcia, owner of Community Tree.
And we're back here on the Sunday, or Saturday special. Don't even know what day of the week it is. My gracious. Charlie Friedman here along with Zoltan Agresi and Gil Stein. And we got some callers over the break, so we're going to go straight to the phones and to Tom. And it says here that you're calling from the Golan Heights. That can't be right. How you doing, Tom?
No, I'm on the White Sand Beach here in Alviso.
Ah, excellent.
I'm not calling from the Golan Heights, but I was actually curious of the strategic value of the Golan Heights had Israel not occupied it right now.
Why don't we go ahead and let Gil respond to that one, because I'm sure he can state it much more succinctly than any of us. Sir?
Thank you very much.
Oh, thank you. Yeah, I'm not sure how succinctly, but I actually lived in the Golan Heights for a couple of years, in the southern Golan Heights. It's strategic for Israel for a couple of reasons. One is water. As you know, the Middle East is somewhat dry as far as precipitation. Most of Israel's water comes from the Sea of Galilee, which is fed by three rivers, and a couple of them come through the Golan Heights. So for keeping a safe, secure supply of water, Israel needs to make sure that they have control of the heights, in my opinion. The other is from a military standpoint, that not only before Israel captured the heights in 1967, Syrian gunners would shoot down at the at people in the lake on fishing boats across the lake to the city of Tiberias, various farms. And people would plow the fields. The tractors had armored plating because people got shot at so many times. So
that's
from
terrible.
From a defensive purpose, they need it. On the other hand, from an offensive purpose, from parts of the Golan Heights, you can look down on Syria. So the Syrians know that if they try to pull anything, it's not that far to Damascus to say it's all downhill from here. Plus, there's some listening stations. And so from a military standpoint, it's quite strategic. But also the water issue is extremely important.
Does that answer your question, Tom?
Yeah, that pretty much does. And I'm, had Israel not have this land, I could only imagine the terrorism that would be involved, you know, poisoning the water or, you know, shooting at boats, like you're saying, this stuff would still go on.
Well, absolutely.
I see that.
The Syrians would simply have been lobbing shells down. In military terms, a heights is always a valuable strategic position for reasons that go back to the days of Caesar and before. And that continues to be true today. Thanks for the call, Tom.
Thank you, too.
Have a great day. We're going to move to our next caller. That would be Ari. Ari, good morning. Thank you for your call.
Thanks for taking my call.
You bet.
Whoever made the comment, I really appreciate them saying this. I'm pro-Israel. I'm Jewish. I like to say that I'm progressive, but I'll tell you what, after what I've been hearing from the so-called progressive left of Santa Cruz, I might be parting camps on this issue. The comment was made when Jews stand up for themselves, you know, when they're not victims, they're hated. I mean, that's just the feeling I'm getting.
It seems that way to me, by golly, because as I pointed out earlier, the old left was always very pro-Jewish, and today the left is virulently anti-Semitic.
Yeah, I think
they love us when we're weak, and I'll tell you what, we're not going on the cattle cars anymore.
Never,
Israel here to stay.
Never again.
Thank you for taking my call.
Ari, thank you very much for making a very valuable point. You underscored it beautifully. This is something that I don't know how we can get through to people's minds. The Jewish people, for 3,000 years, have been subject to discrimination, to oppression, to annihilation, attempted annihilation at various times. The Jewish people have been victims throughout that entire period, and have often depended on the good offices of those who they saw as their friends, people broad-minded enough to accept the Jew as a friend, as a fellow citizen. And we're no longer willing to say that. We're no longer willing to depend on the good offices of the French, or the good offices of the Russians, or the good offices of the United Nations, because we don't trust them. And we understand that if Judaism today, finally, it has a homeland, something it had not had for 3,000 years. But today, the Jewish people have a homeland. They will defend it. They are not aggressors. They have never been aggressors. They don't say, we're going to push the Muslims into the Mediterranean Sea. You've never heard any of that rhetoric out of the Jews, and you never will. All they want is their own small piece of land where they can live and prosper. And as long as you continue to have outfits like Hezbollah, and like Hamas, that simply say, our mission is to exterminate Israel, there will be trouble. Brian in Santa Cruz, good morning, and thank you for your call. Hello, Brian.
Yes. I would like to give a couple points.
Sure.
The first one is, the Middle East was created, the state boundaries was created by the British arbitrarily in 1918 when World War I ended, or 1919. You know, they're the only country that I see that has a viable standing to become a nation is Turkey, because they were the ones who controlled the Ottoman Empire. Okay, that's my first point. Second point is, I know of only four countries in this planet where Muslims get along with their neighbors, and that is Britain, Canada, and the United States, and, you know, Turkey, where they don't have pogroms, where they execute people who disagree with them.
I believe that if you were a Kurd living in Turkey, you might have a different take on that.
Or an Armenian.
Yeah. Yeah, but, I mean, I'm talking recently.
Well, you also need to include Israel, because there are about 1 million Muslims living in Israel who are getting along fairly well with their with the Jewish majority there.
Yeah, but I look at the map of the Middle East, and I understand that, you know, it was made by Disraeli after World War I?
Disraeli left office as prime minister in 1889, I believe.
Oh, okay.
The prime minister at the end of World War I was David Lloyd George.
Okay. But that's my two points. You know, I look at the situation and I say, well, you know, these people, the Arabs, are, you know, living in nations where somebody took out a magic marker and said, is Iraq.
Well, I'll tell you what. If you want to argue for the people of that area to get together and to redraw their map, I could see reasons for that. I think that the same thing could be done in parts of Africa, where, again, tribal lines were not paid too much attention to when people like Cecil John Rhodes broke up the country into the political units we see today. But it doesn't appear that that's on the table. I haven't heard anybody from the Muslim world get up and say, what we need to do is redraw our map. Maybe that would be a way to help things. But until it becomes that way, then it's not something that could be done from the outside, right?
I agree.
Brian, thank you for the call. We appreciate it.
Bye-bye.
We're going to go right to our next caller, and I now have open lines, so I'll give the telephone number once again. We have plenty of time here, and we'd like to hear from you. 479-1080 on KSCO's Saturday special to talk with Zoltan, Gil, and myself about the Middle East. 479-1080 to be on KSCO and KOMY. Liberty, good morning, and thank you for your call.
Yes, good morning. Excellent program.
Thank you, sir.
Excellent guest.
Aren't they?
Yes. I've been interested in the situation over there even before I married my Jewish wife. One of my favorite, all-time favorite movies is Lawrence of Arabia. And anybody who'd like a little primer as to how things wound up the way they are over there now could go out and get the videotape of Lawrence of Arabia.
Of course, Lawrence was an Arabophile, as was most of the British Foreign Office at that time. So that's an important thing to remember.
Yeah. Met a gentleman about a year ago whose grandparents owned property in what we call Palestine today, before the lines were drawn between Israel and Jordan. And they bought the property from Rothschild, who I guess went in there and bought up a bunch of real estate around Israel from the Turks before the First World War, and bought this property, had a title, a deed to it and everything. And when the lines were drawn up separating, creating Israel, unfortunately his property fell outside of the boundary of Israel. And his property was seized by some Arabs, and they were never compensated. And to this day, their property is occupied by Arabs outside of Israel.
It will remain so.
And his grandparents, perhaps great-grandparents, had as much right to call themselves Palestinians as the Muslim Arabs do today. And there were also Christian, quote, Palestinians. So the whole situation over there, I appreciate your take on it 100%. I mean, it's an excellent statement of how things got to be the way they are. What puzzles me is I go to Seder's with my wife, mm-hmm. and know a lot of the local people in the local Jewish community, most of them in the Reformed Jewish community, and it absolutely amazes me the sympathy or lack of sympathy, I'm not quite sure how to state it, but the position of the local Jews on what's going on over there, it puzzles me.
Well, thanks very much for calling and making that point. Let's see what Gil has to say about that. I think he's more knowledgeable than either of us. Thanks for the call, Liberty.
Yeah, I think I share some of what Liberty has to say. It wasn't real specific, and I really don't want to use the opportunity that I have to criticize other members of my faith, but I do agree that within the Reform community, at certain levels, there has been more of the concept of even-handedness and humanitarianism, which I think in a time of war and struggle should be secondary. You can't underestimate what this is doing to Israel. The only Jewish country, the only place where Jews really can feel comfortable being Jewish, I think, and not that we can't in this country, but there's a little difference, because it's the home for Jews from over 100 countries, and I think that This is a time where the entire community should be united, and I share Liberty's concern that it doesn't necessarily seem to be. I'm not sure if they're just a little bit slow getting into gear as the situation is changing so quickly day by day. I'm hoping that there will be more unity with this, and because you can't equivocate here. Hezbollah and their backers in Iran have made it so clear that they want to wipe out the Jewish state.
That's one thing about them. They're very straightforward.
They are. They're not holding any punches. And if I could just expand, this is a perfect opportunity. I want to thank Liberty for giving me the door, and you, Charlie, as well. Since this whole thing started in July 12th, I have been racking my brain of what I can do and what we can do as a community, and not just a Jewish community, but it's a community, it's an issue that affects all of us, all Americans. And in the Good Times on Thursday and in the Sentinel on Friday, there was a paid ad talking about how people can help Israel. The caption is, "Israel, we stand with you." And it mentioned three specific organizations that are doing work to help Israel. All its citizens, Jews, Druze, Christians, Muslims, whatever. One of them is the equivalent of the American Red Cross. It's called Magen David Adom. I recommend, instead of me reading all this, to take a look at those ads. That's ambulances, blood banks, first aid, things like that. Another is called the Israel Crisis Fund. It's set up by the Jewish Federation in San Jose, and that's designed to raise money to help kids and families who are having to live in bomb shelters now for almost four straight weeks. And then a third fund is called Leman Achai, which basically means for my brothers. And that's doing something equivalent to that, except it's doing it in the central part of the country where people have escaped the range of the rockets, and they have relocated hopefully temporarily, and people have taken them to their homes. They've opened the schools because it's, you know, summer recess and things like that. But they need food, they need blankets, they need games to keep the kids busy with. And so we've done that. And the other thing is that I have opened up a chapter, a local chapter, Santa Cruz chapter, of an organization called Stand With Us.
Why don't you real quick like give a phone number or a website or something you have there?
Yes, it's very simple. StandWithUs.com. And I urge everybody who wants more information on not only how they can help, but just to become more informed on this issue, go with StandWithUs.com. There's also links to other news organizations and other service organizations. There's Christian organizations that are behind Israel on this. And that's what I felt I could do. Part of the first order of business is to inform. Mm-hmm. People need to know. And this radio station is terrific for doing that. And I really want to thank the management of KSCO for letting us go on the air and really help inform and create a dialogue and pass this information along.
Well, Gil, I'm glad you took the opportunity to do that. You had mentioned that you wanted to, and I think you picked a wonderful place to insert it. I've got great news. After all of these callers, we finally have a lady, Becky in Santa Cruz, and I believe that she has some questions for Zoltan. Becky, welcome to the program.
Hi, yeah, I think you need some female callers here.
I certainly agree with that, and incidentally, we have open lines now. 479-1080 is the number if you'd like to join us. Becky, go ahead, please.
I'm going to be so bold to ask two questions then. Okay, I have a question for Zoltan and then a question for the general panel. Zoltan, I wanted to get your take on why doesn't, this is about Lebanon, why doesn't the Lebanese army move into southern Lebanon and take over militarily and prevent all these rocket attacks, since they're 70,000 members strong, and the estimates are that Hezbollah, you know, the Hezbollah fighters are probably only about 8,000 members strong. And should I go ahead with the second question, or do you...
Why don't you let Zoltan respond to that, and then we can handle the other one. Zoltan,
that,
please.
Well, the Lebanese army is under, you know, Syrian direction. So Lebanese army is also waiting for the Hezbollah to do the work for themselves. And also the Hezbollah itself is... is really putting a pressure on the Lebanese government, which is quite weak at that this time. You know, Lebanese army is not really strong enough to stand against the Hezbollah. And also, a couple of weeks ago, last week, the Lebanese prime minister was quoted, you know, I think he was in Rome, that or that he's not supporting the Hezbollah. Then he backtracked on that one. That was a wrong translation. So the Lebanese government is quite weak at this time, in my view, to really say anything against it. So they're just too afraid to get involved at this time.
Oh, so basically your answer is that they won't do it.
They won't, you know, because the Lebanese army, they knew, and the Lebanese government knew what was happening, that the Syria was actually tracking down hundreds and hundreds of thousands of rockets, Katyushas, and so on, down to the Hezbollah territory, the Bekaa Valley. So they are also complicit in this way, and now they are suffering the consequences of helping Hezbollah or closing their eyes or not helping the UN to work with the resolution 1559. In other words, disarm the Hezbollah. So that means really is Israel has to just do the work for them, and hopefully once we let Israel, the international community, they left Israel to do the job what the Lebanese army should have done a long time ago, then hopefully the Lebanese army can just go back and move down to the south, being a buffer between Israel and Lebanon, and hopefully the Europeans will send some troops there to actually monitor the peace, because during the last 28 years, if you know, the UN has the intermittent, temporary observing force there, the United Nations, but they never did anything to find out or prevent the Hezbollah moving all these rockets down to the south side.
And Zoltan's explanation, just given so well, says why my theme song for this whole thing is Give War a Chance. Those who are calling for a ceasefire right now are doing the work of Hezbollah.
Yeah, Charlie, I just want to add, Zoltan was absolutely right, but there's also the political issue, and that is that Hezbollah actually has two members in the Lebanese government.
They're
cabinet.
In the government.
That's correct, too, yeah. Politically, they're involved, and also the support what Hezbollah is getting through this, you know, set up social services. Let's face it, the people in Lebanon, the civilians, okay, you can feel sorry for them, but again, they were provided houses, kind of welfare, and social services, coming through the Hezbollah on the political side. And for this reason, they just going to close their eye for the military side. And unfortunately, they are using these people also for human shields. Then they set up the rocket launching established platforms right there on the civilian houses. So when Israel has to get rid of all these rockets attacking their country, unfortunately some of these people who are actually supporting the Hezbollah, they can get injured.
Hezbollah is the classic definition of a fair weather friend. In prior times, they set themselves up as a social organization to provide help to the local civilian population. They help to build places of dwelling, they build schools, etc. But when they begin to attack Israel and when they bring Israeli retaliation, they take those same people that they were doing so much for and use them as civilian human shields. This is not the way good friends are supposed to be.
I also want to mention that Hamas is somewhat similar in their actions, that they also, to some extent, have been a social organization providing hospitals and schools and some other social services. But we also know that it's a violent terrorist group as well.
Well, I don't have any problem with the social services. It's, of course, the attacks on civilians that are just unconscionable.
If Hezbollah and Hamas would confine themselves to those activities, no one here would have a quarrel with them either.
Can I ask my next question?
Please do.
Okay, I wanted to bring it back to a local focus here, because there's a lot to talk about in Santa Cruz. What do the panelists think about Mayor Cynthia Matthews having given the Palestinian ambassador the key to the city at this Resource Center for Nonviolence event?
I don't know if you were in tune at the top of the hour. Now, we talked about that briefly. Basically, the reaction of the people here is verges on the unprintable. None of us are at all in favor. As a matter of fact, we're all ashamed and revolted by the idea. Do I speak for everyone?
I think you do.
Yeah, and my this is just it's just plain despicable, you know.
Does that answer your question, Becky?
Yeah, I noticed that the Research Center for Nonviolence was collecting money and sending it to relief in Gaza. I was wondering if any of that money went to any of relief in the state of Israel.
No, it's going to go to
the victims of the Hamas rocket attacks or.
No, it's going to go to the same bank account. No, next to Arafat's, you know, $1 billion. So those Palestinian people, they're not going to see a penny of it.
No. No, when you give money to Hamas or when you give money to the PLO, none of that, or maybe a tiny, tiny percentage. It's like the oil for food money that went into Iraq.
Yep.
Virtually none of that was used for the benefit of any ordinary Iraqi. Rather, instead, it went to Saddam Hussein to either build palaces, buy weapons, or use as international bribes.
Yeah, and I think, Becky, if you are concerned about helping rebuild the homes and factories and schools in Israel that have been decimated by the rockets from Gaza and from the north and Lebanon, as I said before, I don't know if you heard that part.
Yeah, I did.
Okay, go to the Good Times, look at those, or the Sentinel, see that ad. There are three organizations that strictly civilian, has nothing to do with military. It's all humanitarian aid, helping the victims of terror.
Well, I was just thinking, if Mayor Matthews was at this event, and they're raising money for the victims of the conflict, is any of that money going to the Israeli victims?
No, not at all. I don't think so. Insofar as the contemporary American left is concerned, there's a right side and a wrong side in this battle. Hezbollah and Hamas are in the right, and Israel is in the wrong. And in my opinion, this is absolutely 180 degrees out of reality.
Yeah. You know, Becky, I want to add one other thing what we didn't talk about with Mayor Matthews. I think it's kind of ironic. This woman, I believe, is the head of Planned Parenthood in Santa Cruz.
Right. She's the executive director.
Okay. And in, quote, Palestine, honor killings are not punished. Honor killings are when a woman who has a child out of wedlock or even becomes, you know, has sex out of wedlock, the male members of the family have the right to execute her for bringing shame upon the family. Mm-hmm. That's the method of birth control practice there, it seems. And for somebody who is the executive director of Planned Parenthood to give the key to our city to somebody who is an ambassador of an entity, whether it's a country or whatever, he's a representative of that place that does not punish or condemn that kind of conduct, I think is reprehensible.
Well, that didn't come up at the Monday night event.
Does that surprise you?
Of course it wouldn't. Becky, thanks very much for the call. You raised a couple of really excellent points, and we thank you for it.
No problem. Thanks.
Going to move on to our next caller right now. We looks like we're getting rather close, so let's go ahead and try to crowd in one more. Krishna, welcome to the program today. Thanks for calling.
Hi.
Hi.
I'm just adding my voice because I heard you say that we're not getting enough female callers.
Well, I'm bless you for joining us.
Thank you very much. Being a conservative, you know that I'm for Israel all the way. Now, my second point was, before I called you, the word just went right out of my brain into the stratosphere. What is this that the right fundamentalists talk about as far as Jerusalem goes, that when the world comes to an end, the heavens are going to open and the people on the right are going to be sucked up? What's the word, technical term for it? There's a technical
Armageddon?
Term for this process.
We're talking about Armageddon?
No, it's not Armageddon.
The rapture?
The rapture. The rapture. The rapture of the right. One of my new, very liberal Jewish friends, I asked her, what does she think about the phenomenon now of the conservatives always for Israel and the liberals find themselves flummoxed.
We've talked about that. Yeah, it's a total 180 from the way things were, say, 50 or 60
but,
years ago.
You know, she resorts finally to the rapture as a way that the right are fooling the Jews into believing that they're for them, that what they're actually for is turning all the Jews into Christians.
I have,
and taking over Jerusalem.
I'll tell you what, we've gone full circle now. This reminds me of our first caller who was coming up with some really weird stuff. And I hope, Krishna, you have to recognize that as something that comes from the land of Oz.
But, you know, this is accepted by educated liberal left, that I suppose that's crazy.
Have you ever heard the word
rightist?
You ever hear the word sophomore? Literally,
literally translated,
a sophomore is a wise fool. Sometimes people who are tremendously intelligent can come up with absolute nonsense.
And just to comment upon the just recent conversation you had with the
I'm
last
sorry,
caller.
Becky, I got to cut it off there. We're out of time. Krishna, but thank you for calling.
You're welcome.
This is KSCO Santa Cruz, KOMY Watsonville. I want to say goodbye for Zoltan Agresi, Gil Stein, and myself, Charlie Friedman. I'm sorry?
10 to midnight tonight.
Program will be repeated from 10 to midnight tonight. Stay tuned to KSCO and KOMY for the best in talk around the Monterey Bay.
Your source for news, sports, traffic, and weather. AM 1080, KSCO, Santa Cruz, San Jose, Salinas, and Monterey.
That's all, folks.
Local news and the best in talk radio. AM 1080, KSCO Santa Cruz. AM 1340, KOMY Watsonville.
Oh, I know, Slater. Sitting down face-to-face again. The United Nations Security Council about to hold an informal meeting any minute now to discuss possible terms for a ceasefire to end the violence in Lebanon.
This is a significant development that bodes well towards progress towards a resolution. France and America have agreed on a draft.
Fox's Molly Line covering the story for us at the United Nations. And in fact, both the U.S. and the French ambassadors have publicly come out saying they have made an agreement. Most recently, France's ambassador Jean-Marc Lesablier said that their agreement involves calls for a full cessation of hostility and an immediate stop by Israel of all naval, ground, and air force action in Lebanon. Meantime, Israel's cabinet minister praising the UN ceasefire draft, calling it an important development, but also saying the Israeli military not stopping yet and will keep up its strikes in Lebanon in the coming days. A spokesman for President Bush saying the president has signed off on the agreement, adding he has no illusions about how difficult it may be to actually end the fighting. And in the Middle East, the violence continues between Israel and Hezbollah. Fox News Radio's Mike Makowicz joins us live from Jerusalem with the latest. Mike?
Allison, it's clear that as the diplomats talk, Israel and Hezbollah are going to continue to fight. A Lebanese cabinet minister, who is also Hezbollah, says they're going to fight until Israel leaves. And overnight, Israel blanketed the Lebanese port city of Sidon with leaflets warning that it's about to be hit. Now, I asked Israeli defense spokesman Captain Jacob Dalal, who would only say that
we are continuing, as we have been for the last over 3 weeks, to target Hezbollah missiles, missile launchers, Hezbollah terrorists, and their whole infrastructure.
Israeli commandos stormed an apartment building in Tyre overnight to destroy what it says is a rocket launching site. Hezbollah fired 170 rockets, killing three.
You're listening to Fox News Radio, fair and balanced.
My name's Rachel, and I'm 10 years old. I like riding my bike, playing soccer, and in 8 years, I'll be an alcoholic. I'll start drinking in middle school, just at parties. My friends will drink, so I will too.
Kids who drink before age 15 are 5 times more likely to have alcohol problems when they're adults.
My parents won't really know what's going on yet. I mean, I'll do okay in school, but when I drink, I'll do some things I don't really want to do. So by the time my parents talk to me about it, alcohol won't be my only problem.
Alcohol affects their judgment and their future, so start talking before they start drinking.
My parents won't believe it could happen to me.
For more information on teens and alcohol, and to learn what you can do, visit the web at stopalcoholabuse.gov. Brought to you by the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services, the Ad Council, and this station.
Officials with the Tour de France say they no longer consider American Floyd Landis the winner.
The International Cycling Union confirming that test results from Landis's backup sample came back positive from Paris's anti-doping lab, supporting earlier results confirming that the winner of France's most prestigious bicycle race used performance-enhancing drugs.
Fox's Mary Regal. Well, Landis once again maintaining his innocence has claimed the testosterone was natural. The head of the lab that did this second test says their procedure was foolproof and that no error was possible here. The health of Cuba's president, Fidel Castro, remains uncertain, and now Cuba is claiming it fears a U.S. invasion.
The Cuban government, which is now under the nominal control of Fidel Castro's brother, Raul, who's himself the defense minister, is rapidly mobilizing militias, and the Cuban military is on high alert. State-controlled media has been whipping up a frenzy, broadcasting interviews with people vowing to repel U.S. invaders. The White House is categorically denying any plans for any military action exist, insisting the destiny of Cuba is in the hands of its own people. James Blears, Fox News Radio.
Please free my husband, the wife of a kidnapped Israeli Defense Forces soldier, issuing another public appeal, this time to the spouses of Hezbollah fighters.
I know, as a wife to a wife, that she probably can't feel the way that I feel. She know that she can understand me. And maybe she have the influence on her husband to tell him to bring me a sign that he's still alive.
That's Karnak Goldwasser's husband, Ehud, was one taken by Hezbollah on July 12th. He's one of three kidnapped Israeli soldiers. Mrs. Goldwasser is in the U.S. pleading for American support to intervene. Again, our top story, the United Nations Security Council is holding an informal meeting to discuss possible terms for a ceasefire. I'm Allison Slater, Fox News Radio.
Good afternoon, everyone, and thank you for joining us here at AM 1080 KSCO Santa Cruz, AM 1340 KOMY Watsonville. We are also broadcasting worldwide at www.kseo.com. I'm Dave Michaels with your weather report for today, Saturday, August 5th, 2006. Today you can expect it to be partly cloudy with highs around 72 degrees. Winds will be west-northwest at 10 to 15 miles an hour. Tonight will be partly cloudy with lows near 55 degrees and winds west-northwest at 5 to 10 miles an hour. Tomorrow you can expect it to be partly cloudy with highs around 69 degrees, winds west at 10 to 20 miles an hour, and tomorrow night will be partly cloudy during the evening, which will give way to cloudy skies overnight, lows around 54 degrees and winds west-northwest at 10 to 15 miles an hour. Your Monterey Bay boaters forecast for tonight. You can expect west winds 10 knots, wind waves 2 feet or